Hey there, I'm Ed Ronco, and this is the Up North Lowdown from Interlaken Public Radio. Our program this week is all about the world, and it's all about Northern Michigan. It's about both, actually. We have two stories about immigration this week, a conversation with an immigration attorney in Traverse City, and the story of a Bel Air woman becoming an American citizen. We'll also hear about coffee and the war in the Congo, and we have another story about what happens when your own personal world is turned upside down. Let's get started. When people talk about immigration here in Northern Michigan, most mention the long history of migrant farm work or the seasonal staff who come from all over the world to work during our tourist season. But local immigration attorney Marcelo Betti says there's a lot more to the story than that. He runs the Up North branch of the law firm Immigration Law and Justice Michigan. As immigration and detentions capture national headlines, IPR's Claire Keenan Kurgan visited his Traverse City office for some local perspective, starting with what immigration to our region looks like.
We feel like Northern Michigan is not particularly diverse, but since we opened our office here in Traverse City 10 years ago, we've kept track of the different nationalities that we've helped over the years, and we are at over 70 countries represented. You know, so like here in Traverse City, I personally interacted with people, you know, and helped people from 70 plus different countries, you know. So there is a little bit more diversity than we think.
Looking at what countries people come from, what are some of the trends that you've noticed?
Yeah, I think that when we started off here at the office, a good majority, you know, about 50 to 60% of folks we saw here were from Mexico or Central American countries. And that still represents a pretty large percentage. But over the years, we started representing more and more Ukrainian individuals. Since the war began, we have represented well over 200 Ukrainian clients here in Traverse City. Most people don't know this, but Traverse City region has been a resettlement region for Ukrainian refugees who came here from the former Soviet Union in the late 90s, early 2000s. And because of that core group of Ukrainian immigrants here in our region, if you look back 3 years ago when the war between Ukraine and Russia started, as you would assume, a lot of the Ukrainian folks here in our region still had friends and relatives in Ukraine, and they were very quick and willing to sponsor those friends and relatives to come here. So really over the last 3 years, I would say over half of our clients here in Traverse City have been Ukrainians. For the vast majority of those Ukrainians who are here in the United States, who came here because of the war, the vast majority of them do not currently have a path for a permanent legal status.
We've talked a bit in the past few months, and I remember one thing you said about how people often think of the immigration system as like you get in a line and you wait your turn and then eventually you can have the status you want, but that you think that's not quite the right analogy for how it works.
Yeah, immigration is far more complex than, you know, fill out some forms, pay a fee, and get in line. Unfortunately, the way that our U.S. immigration laws are written, I always compare that to a series of boxes, you know, a series of categories. And unless a person fits into a particular box, you know, whether it's the box for close relatives to U.S. citizens, or the box for people who can invest a lot of money on a particular business, or who can fill some specific highly specialized occupation. Unless you fit into one of those boxes, you are not able to even start an immigration process into the United States. So there's just a misconception that there is a, you know, magical solution, you know, to immigrate to the United States, but it's far more complicated than that.
Like most immigration lawyers, Betty is keeping a close eye on President Trump's overhaul of U.S. immigration policy. He has watched as various visa programs have been frozen or canceled. The changes in the past few months have been dramatic and quick.
with everything changing, it becomes really difficult to advise your clients, you know, let them know what is the best course of action for their situation, because what the best advice would have been a week ago may no longer be the best advice, you know, because there may have been some change in how the government is going to implement and enforce immigration law. So that's, you know, again, nobody is that concerned about the plight of lawyers, right? But but it is a real challenge, you know, to the extent that people come to you and they want to know, hey, what's the best for me? And the fact that is just a moving target is really challenging.
And then looking at Northern Michigan, what do you think the biggest impacts of Trump's immigration policy? Like, what have you seen already and what do you anticipate seeing? Mm-hmm.
Well, I still think it's early. Okay, I think that most of the, you know, big operations, arresting people for a lack of status, you know, most of those have been conducted in larger cities. You know, the administration wants to show that they can make a big splash and arrest hundreds and thousands of people in one swoop, you know, and here in Northern Michigan, we just don't have the population density that allows for that kind of thing. We have seen, you know, immigration arrests happen already.
Those arrests were in Antrim County. A Facebook post from the U.S. Border Patrol Detroit sector said four people from Honduras and Ecuador were being, quote, processed for removal from the United States. Betty says he's seen immigration crackdowns have a wide range of effects.
There are so many different ways that this could affect, that this is already affecting people, right? Anecdotally, again, I have clients who, for example, came to me because they needed help to renew their green card. Okay, so this is someone who is already a green card holder, you know, a lawful permanent resident, and yet I've had that person just decide, oh, I'm too scared to actually, you know, file any paperwork. You know, I would rather like remain hidden than actually like apply for this thing that is, you know, a benefit that they qualify for.
He has seen how incidents in other parts of the country, like green card holders getting arrested at citizenship appointments or at airport security, have a sort of chilling effect on people.
We're just getting all of these stories that are, you know, like really putting a fear on people that if you are not, you know, a U.S. citizen, then you are not welcome here. And, you know, and there's no question that fear is a big part, you know, of the current campaign that this administration has against immigrants.
Traverse City-based immigration attorney Marcelo Betty talking with IPR's Claire Keenan Kurgan. Betty mentioned the path to citizenship, and honestly, there's no one way to get there. One Bel Air woman, though, just completed her own journey, taking the oath as a U.S. citizen last month. Ping He Pridemore joined more than 200 others in doing so at a naturalization ceremony in Grand Rapids. Her friend, Austin Rolater, went with her and has this story.
When you were younger, did you ever imagine that you would become an American citizen?
Never, ever. I even didn't know that I would like go abroad to study until I was like junior year in college.
Ping left China when she was 23 years old to get her master's from the University of Michigan. One day, Ping was at the bar and she ran into Andrew Pridemore. She didn't know it at the time, but this would change her life forever.
I go out to the bar, see Ping sitting there talking to her friends. I go over and I flex my arm because I used to lift a lot back then. And so all of them were grabbing my tricep, right? And then Ping comes around and she gets her turn and I saw those eyes light up like 4th of July, man. That's how she remembers it too.
No.
Okay, so it wasn't the triceps that changed her life. It was the fact that Andrew speaks many languages and that he's traveled the world, including to China.
I was like, oh, it's one of those tourists who've been to Shanghai for a week. And then he started talking, and he is like, he's like, oh, I've been to Chongqing, I've been to Zhangjiajie. I'm like, oh my God, you are like in China, China.
Eventually, Ping and Andrew got married. For a while, Ping had a green card, but it was kind of a pain for them to travel together. So then the thing she never imagined happening happened. She applied for American citizenship.
Yeah, I'm still the same person. If nothing changes, just going to get my paperwork done.
It took years of interviews and then a test, but finally, in April, Ping, Andrew, and a group of family and friends went to Grand Rapids for her naturalization ceremony.
Oh, thank you.
At the venue, there's a long line of people from all over the world. Many of them are dressed in their traditional garb. Ping turns in her green card, a clerk does a final check on her paperwork, and then Ping goes into the auditorium and the ceremony begins.
Welcome, everyone. My name is Bob Yonker, Judge Yonker today, and it is my privilege and really pleasure to preside over these proceedings where we will welcome today 216 new United States citizens from 60 countries around the world. So let us all stay standing and begin with the advance of our colors and the Star Spangled Banner.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last.
The pinnacle moment of the day came with the oath of citizenship. Here's an excerpt from that moment.
Please raise your right hand. New citizens, do you hereby declare on oath or affirmation that you will support and defend the Constitution and laws of the United States of America against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and that you take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, so help you God. New citizens, do you so solemnly swear or affirm? Then welcome to citizenship in these United States of America.
There's almost this collective sigh of relief in the auditorium. All these people have just been transformed into American citizens. But Ping really isn't swept up in the emotions of it all.
Do you feel any differently now that you're American?
No. I'm happy though. Yeah.
The crowd leaves the auditorium and a party erupts. There's excitement and even some tears.
Okay, we're Ping. Hey, hi. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
The little American.
Yeah. She's more American than you are now.
Yeah. Wow.
Thank you.
Ping will have to give up her Chinese citizenship, making it harder to travel to China and see her family. But it will be easier to live in the place that she calls home.
There was like always a kind of like going through the securities, checking your IDs, check those paperwork that. And today was just a like welcome, congratulations. And it's the first time ever being treated, I really feel like it's one of American. So that feels pretty nice.
Reporter Austin Rollator with that story. It is time for a break. When we come back.
To Marceline, it's like paradise. You should all come visit, everyone listening, she says. Once peace returns, you can try fresh fish from the lake that you'll love.
Stay with us.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.
Oh, hey. Didn't see you there. Just chatting with my hens. Just a little hen social time. If you want some garden tips and advice, tune in to Grow and Tell, IPR's guide to gardening with the seasons, hosted by me, Dylan Kulik, every other Friday and online anytime at interlochenpublicradio.org. Listen in and happy gardening.
We're back. I'm Ed. This is The Lowdown. This next story is a little bit about war, but a lot about hope, too. There is an escalating war in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, but even that is not enough to stop the relationship between a coffee cooperative there and a coffee shop here in Traverse City. IPR's Claire Keenan-Kurgan has that story.
Marceline Budza runs a women's cooperative in the eastern part of Congo, on Lake Kivu, one of the Great Lakes of Africa.
L'île d'Ituri, c'est une région magnifique, montagneuse, une région touristique.
The island she lives on, she says, is beautiful, mountainous, and it was a tourist hub, at least before the war. Marceline has come to Traverse City, her second visit to northern Michigan. She's just finished speaking to a small crowd at Oriana, a grocery store that sells her co-op's coffee. We step into a room to talk, and she tells me she's more than used to the lake lifestyle. The freshwater lake region in Africa where she lives is agriculturally rich, known for its coffee and chocolate farms. To Marceline, it's like paradise. You should all come visit, everyone listening, she says. Once peace returns, you can try fresh fish from the lake that you'll love. A rebel group called M23 recently took control of the biggest city in her region. All the banks nearby are closed, and that poses a problem for her. Before the war, she says, the buyers would come to South Kivu. But today, they can't. Coffee is still being grown and bought, but the trade is slower and more difficult. Right now, Eastern Congo gets more attention for a different natural resource. It has key minerals, especially for the tech sector. There's global competition for its reserves of gold, tin, and tantalum, used in electronic components. And it's estimated to have 70% of the world's supply of cobalt, used in batteries.
The reality is, if you're listening to this on your phone, you should think Congo. If you have an EV car, you should think Congo. And
the That's only Chris Treeter, the owner of Higher Grounds, the Traverse City-based coffee company that works with Marceline's co-op. He's been to the DRC many times, and he's imported coffee from Congo for over 10 years. He's worked with the U.S. State Department and Congo's Ministry of Agriculture. According to reports last month from NPR and the BBC, the U.S. is working on a minerals for security deal in the DRC that would help their government defeat rebel groups and secure U.S. mineral deals in a country that usually trades more with China. Treeter hopes they'll look at coffee, too, while they're negotiating a deal, because he thinks the economic benefits for locals are a path to peace.
Coffee overlaps where the conflict is and where the minerals are. And until our leaders understand the fact that if they want access to minerals, they need to care for people, they will continue to waste our tax dollar money and hurt humans.
The White House senior advisor for Africa has said a deal is coming. But until then, U.S. tariffs have also thrown more uncertainty beyond the war into the mix for Marceline Budza's coffee co-op. For now, she hopes Northern Michigan residents try out her coffee to support the women in her cooperative and their families. She says the coffee has a big impact on life in her community. After Traverse City, she was headed to Washington, D.C. to meet with officials about the war in eastern Congo. She said the only thing she planned to ask for was peace in her community.
IPR's Claire Keenan-Kurgan reporting. Marceline Budza's country, on the other side of the globe from where we sit, has been turned upside down. What happens when your personal world is shattered, while so much around you stays just fine? That's what happened to the person we will meet next. A recurring showcase of stories and songs made out of grief and loss takes the stage in Frankfurt this weekend. It is called Stories That Heal. Songwriters get together with people who have stories to share, sometimes about traumatic life events. And one of the workshop facilitators is a Frankfurt resident whose life was changed by the loss of her son. Maxwell Howard has her story.
Christina Ryan Stoltz lives in Frankfurt in a house she bought when her son Isaac was a kid.
When Isaac was born, I felt I found my purpose. And when he died, I found my mission.
For a long time, she was a massage therapist because of Isaac.
I had been waiting tables, and that meant I worked nights, but it also meant I got to be with him all day. But I knew that once he started school when he was five, that meant if I kept waiting tables, I wasn't ever going to see him.
Christina was a young mom when she had Isaac, just 20 years old. She said Isaac and her were close and that he felt like an old soul to her.
I remember when he was like 3 years old, we were getting ready to cross the street in downtown Frankfurt to go to the library. And he put his hand across my belly and looks both ways. And he says, "Is this appropriate?" And then we went.
Christina says, as a kid, Isaac had a heart for underdogs and would make friends with them easily. And in high school, Christina didn't worry much about him.
Yeah, he just didn't mess up a lot. And for all intents and purposes, I would have said I thought he was one of the happiest people that I ever knew.
Then, one day, shortly after he had just turned 18, Isaac disappeared after an argument with his girlfriend. He went missing. Police showed up at Christina's house, asking if she had seen him. Confused and worried, Christina tried calling Isaac, but couldn't get through. Eventually, Isaac called his mother. He told her what he planned to do and where. Christina and her husband, Josh, rushed to the location Isaac had mentioned, a nearby field. When they arrived, Josh went ahead into the field, and then he turned back.
I kind of like caught my breath and then made it a little further, and Josh ran to me and, you know, just started telling me that it was just him and I now, and that he needed me to stay with him.
After Isaac's suicide, Christina was lost. She was in shock. And for the next few years, she wasn't sure what to do.
I started drinking a lot after Isaac died, and I quit drinking at the two-year mark, just about 2 years. And that began the process of feeling my feelings, honestly.
Today, Christina teaches holistic practices from her shared studio in Beulah, and also educates young people on ways to reduce stress and anxiety. It's something she does because of Isaac. At the Stories That Heal workshop, she brings students through breathing and mindfulness exercises at the beginning of each meeting.
That opportunity with ourselves is we're all gonna close our eyes first off.
This is from a workshop with students at Benzie Middle School.
Everyone's probably feeling a little nervous about having to do this. I know I am.
Christina says that while she was initially processing her own feelings after Isaac's death, she also was trying to understand why he did what he did.
I questioned every single aspect of my parenting and my choices and everything I had ever done. I did that for many years, but I very quickly knew that I wanted to make sure this, if there was any way to prevent it, that I was being as honest with myself as I could so that I could help maybe other families not ever experience this.
Christina went to conferences, workshops, seminars, getting all different kinds of training. Over time, she built a toolbox of methods that helped her.
I found, you know, some things to hold on to that were helping me understand how I was going to be able to continue to walk with it. I always liken it to, like, that day I was given a really heavy backpack and I did not have the strength or the muscles or the endurance to carry it. And I'm still carrying that, but I've gotten stronger.
And as she learned how to cope in the wake of Isaac's death, she began to feel a sense of responsibility to share what she had learned.
I would prefer to know nothing and give it all back if that were an option, but it's not. And so what do you do when you don't have an option, when you can't change the past and you can't bring somebody back?
Christina says what she wants for her students is simple, a chance to take a breath and think clearly, something she doesn't think Isaac had in his last moments. Christina told me about Isadora, a student who came up to her at the beginning of class.
This girl runs to me and said that she used that breath technique that I taught last week when she was upset and it worked. And then later that weekend, her mom was upset and she taught her mom that breath technique and it worked. And did I have more? And it was just such like this powerful moment for me.
Hopefully, Christina says, something like this can help another Isaac. And as it turns out, Isadora was one of her son's nicknames. Some of the concepts are making it into music through the Stories That Heal workshop. This is a song from the workshop written by Tim Jones with help from the students.
I wanna feel free, singing in the sun, laughing in the breeze, letting go.
Stories That Heal is a music storytelling and community well-being project focused on mental health and healing through lifting local stories and musical expressions in Benzie County. The story was produced by Maxwell Howard. If you would like to listen to the podcast series that was made by IPR about last year's Stories That Heal project, visit iprnews.org.
1, 2, 3.
And that's it for this week's Up North Lowdown. We had contributions from Claire Keenan Kurgan, Austin Rowlater, and Maxwell Howard. Our producer is Max Copeland. I'm Ed Ronco. And we make this program at Interlochen Public Radio.
Everybody's talking, but I can't hear a word.
Let's leave you now with a little more music from the Stories That Heal project.
Living in a bubble, feeling unheard.
Thanks for listening. Have a great week.
I like singing with my sisters and knowing they need me. I know I'll miss our life together, but it's time that I leave. I wanna build a fire and talk to the trees.